Hey, it's Big Nazar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host Canucks Insider Thomas Drantz here. Drantz are covering the team for The Athletic as well. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider. Powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantzer, you think you're going to be able to get through the show today?
I'm not sure. I'm a little distracted.
I don't know if I've ever seen you this, like, animated. and agitated's not the right word, but just, like...
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
There's, like, a level of excitement for me. Well, first of all, the regular season is too long.
Uh-huh.
So, game 82... is something that I'm thrilled about. I'm so excited to get through one last game. I'm glad that there's no pretense of it mattering.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I feel relieved that Dallas won last night, and so I know that I'm locked into Nashville because I'd be sweating this result.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely losing my mind all night. And so maybe there's, like, a sense of, like, gala's acceptance there, but nonetheless. And then morning touches in Peg City. Like a gift, a thunderbolt from the heavens. And you know, it's like morning touches. Like, yeah, you're going out, you're getting some puck touches, you're working on your,
sure.
You're feeling your feet, feeling your hands.
Not the most common hockey expression, I don't think.
No, not the most common, but not not outside. But when you attach it to Peg City, which also a real thing.
Uh-huh.
People usually refer to Winnipeg as the Peg, but... You know, there's a Peg City Basketball League. I've obviously done my research here, offering programs for senior men's and women's teams. So, like, that's a thing that it's called. There's a Peg City Car Co-op. Free plug.
There you go.
So it's not, but when you put it together.
Yes, the combination.
It's just the most phenomenal.
So for people that are
uplifting.
For people that are in the dark, the Canucks, you know, they tweet the pictures from practice and morning skates, whatever it is, guys walking into the arena, and this one was a series of pictures of the game day skate in Winnipeg, and the caption was
the world's most brilliant caption.
The caption was "Morning touches in Peg City."
Yeah,
and it's attracted a fair bit of attention on Twitter.
Well,
I think it's fair to say
it's just fabulous. It's just such a deliriously funny combination of words.
It is.
So, you know, it's game 82. There's not a lot to play for, right? But you do have to be on your game. When you go to Peg City.
No, Nate.
I'm just saying, Jamie.
All right.
It's a tough place to play on the hole.
Okay. Walk that line, buddy. Nate from Comox says, morning touches in Peg City. Is this an episode of Red Shoe Diaries? That's the exact same reference I made in the bullpen before the show. Was the Red Shoe Diaries reference.
Sorry, who was that signed texter?
Nate from Comox.
Nate from Comox, Jamie Dodd, and David Duchovny doing the Elias Lindholm, Connor Garland.
Dakota
Joshua synchronized, like, yay!
All right, anyways. I do love that you were doing your Peg City research, by the way, on all the different businesses that have used the Peg City nickname.
I saw the tweet, I went and showered, and I was laughing. Just like crying laughing, like to the point where my wife, taking a business call from the other room, was like, can you shut up? Because I was just like crying laughing at all these terrible jokes that I came up
with. Okay, we got to move on, else we do the whole show. But here's my last thought is that...
we have to move on before Drantz gets the show canceled.
Knowing that, this was a meaningless final game of the regular season, right? A bunch of players won't be in the lineup. We'll touch on that more. I think the Canucks admin... saw the opportunity to drop a nugget of a of a caption. They're like, this is the perfect time. Meaningless game 82. Let's roll this out right now. That's my theory.
Yeah. So they got their jokes in the back door.
All right. Okay. We got a lot of serious business, real serious business to get into today. So let's get right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 18th. And the headline is, as you mentioned, Dranser, it's official now. The Canucks will meet the Nashville Predators in round one. Dallas beat St. Louis in a shootout last night. But, of course, even just getting the game to overtime meant that the Stars clinched first place in the Western Conference in the regular season, which means the Canucks are in second place, and they will play the first wildcard team, the Nashville Predators. So we've had a chance to kind of get used to the idea a little bit, but now it's set. Now we can really dig into this matchup. We can do a little bit here. Obviously, we'll have the rest of the show to do so, as well as tomorrow's show. It looks like game one is going to be Sunday. We'll wait to see what the rest of the schedule looks like. But what are your I don't want to say first thoughts, because as I said, we've been thinking about this already here, but kind of big picture look at this this series coming up now.
Yeah, I mean, the Canucks are favored about 60-40 according to the gambling markets, and about 62% by Dom's model, which hasn't published yet, but that's a direct from the source. So 62% favorites going into the series. They should be favored, right? You've got the edge on special teams, and this is sort of an interesting one because the Canucks power play hasn't necessarily carried the mustard for this team in the second half, and yet against a Predators penalty kill that's ticked along at 76%, bottom third of the league, I mean, that's an that's an area where the Canucks can do real damage, you'd think, you'd hope.
Yep.
So, but I think slightly better on the power play, slightly better on the penalty kill, special teams edge, dock it up for Vancouver. Goaltending, Saros, really good. Like, really, really good. He's been an excellent goaltender across the last 5 years for sure. Honestly, he's probably been a top three goalie in the NHL when you combine durability, consistency, high level performance, right? This guy's probably a top three goaltender over the last 5 years. And yet Demko's outperformed him this year and Demko's fresher and Demko looked good when we saw him against Calgary. So I'm not too worried about like the rust question or the, is he going to be, you know, Ryan Miller returning in 2015 and he's slow side to side. Like, we don't have those questions, I don't think. We shouldn't. So I think you'd have to give the Canucks the edge in net, too. You'd have to say, hey, at the end of the day, I'd rather have Demko factoring in the rest and factoring in how he's performed all year and factoring in the size, right? Which Saros has overcome it. But it's one thing to overcome it over the grind of a regular season facing a variety of different teams.
Yep.
It's a different thing when you're facing the shot quality aces that are the Vancouver Canucks with their bevy of one-shot scorers up and down the lineup. So, you know, that's sort of, I think you give the goaltending edge to the Canucks and do it quite comfortably. Then you get to the 5-on-5 thing. And here's where the stylistic contrast becomes really sharp, because both teams are top of the league at generating zone time, right? Like, Canucks are fourth in the NHL, Preds are sixth. Preds numbers, though, have spiked to being some of the best in the league after the All-Star break. And the difference is that the Canucks kill a lot of time in the offensive zone. They like to possess the puck up high while they get their change, grind you down, take point shots, really maintain puck possession, avoid giving up anything on the rush. And the Predators make all sorts of hay, right? Like, they are an elite 5-on-5 scoring chance generating team. Up there with the Edmontons, the Torontos, the Colorados of the world, and you know, what do those teams have that the Predators don't? A McKinnon, a Matthews, a McDavid, right? So a pretty incredible set of results. You know, the Canucks, we've talked about it a lot, even as their results have flagged down the stretch. In some ways, like, my editorial slant's been higher on them because they've controlled play better. And yet, one of the very short list of teams that have controlled play even better than Vancouver has is this Predators team that's only lost 7 games in regulation since the All-Star break. You know, I sort of look at this Predators team as presenting a very dangerous opponent, right? The upside case for them that they're able to find seams in Vancouver's high-level defensive coverage, that they're able to deny the Canucks the sort of zone time that they live off, that they're going to be able to find ways to attack the Canucks off the rush, which the Canucks' entire method of playing is designed to prevent. Those attributes actually, like, you know, I know the old maxim of a good defense beats a good offense, but honestly, the Predators are almost designed in a lab to stress, in my opinion, what Vancouver wants to do 5-on-5 and what they don't want to avoid are the things that the Predators specialize in. Specifically, all year long, the Predators have spent the second fewest amount of time in the defensive zone. Right? Like, only one team in the league, Carolina, denies zone time better than the Predators, and that's Vancouver's bread and butter. That's where Vancouver actually does its best work defensively, by just hanging on to the puck 150 feet from their net and denying the opposition the chance to counter. They're never going to be out of a game. Canucks are never the Predators are never going to be out of a game given the way that they score. You like Vancouver's high-end talent. You like all of their sort of peripheral edges, goaltending, special teams, and yet, you know, fundamentally, I'm pretty confident that this series is going to come down to, is Vancouver's low event 5-on-5 defensive style able to meaningfully contain the Predators? Because if the series becomes one where the Canucks have to keep up offensively, right, where the Predators are able to eliminate leads that the Canucks get, where the Predators are able to score first, with even half the time, just like, not all the time, but just like score first some of the time.
Yep.
I think this is going to be could get a little dicey for Vancouver. In any event, we'll make our picks tomorrow.
I think we'll do that tomorrow, yeah.
But one thing I'd say is I do think the 60-40 split in the gambling markets slightly overvalues Vancouver's chances, slightly undervalues Nashville's. Dom Lecision disagrees with me. He sent me his bet stubs. He's riding hard on the Canucks.
There you go.
In this series. But I look at it and think, at the very least, I'm expecting this to be pretty close.
And I got to say, I do think this is going to be a really interesting series. Now, I'm going to pick the Canucks to win. I'll give a little preview of our picks
tomorrow.
Oh, you
just made your pick.
No, because we'll do the number of games.
Wow.
Really, well, we always do that.
You're really holding back.
We always do that.
Man.
Whatever.
Well, we always do that. What, cover a Canucks playoff team? Something we've never done?
When we pick playoff series, we pick the team and the number of games.
Okay.
So I'm giving half of my pick right now.
Check out Pick City over here.
That's
Morning
right.
Touches and Pick City.
Morning Touches and Pick City. Afternoon Touches for us, for our show. Right. But I think this is going to be a fascinating series because you look at both of these teams, and I think they are really interesting examples of punching above their weight thanks to really excellent coaching and punching above their weight in a really specific area, right? And you look at the Canucks, they've become a legitimately elite defensive 5-on-5 team in the NHL, right? It's all, like, them, Carolina, Florida as some of the like elite defensive teams. And I think if you looked at this personnel group before the season, nobody would have picked that, right? We've talked a lot about how nobody picked them to win the division, but even just specifically zeroing in on the defensive side of things, I don't think anyone saw this Canucks team being, you know, among the best defensive teams in the NHL. And I think you would say the same thing for Nashville, right? Like, and we've all done the exercise. We were talking about on the show yesterday, right? Like, Colton Sissons is their second line center. And, you know, hey, shout out to Colton Sissons, North Van guy, happy for him having that success, but he doesn't scream second line center on one of the best offensive teams in the NHL,
no.
Right? Jason Zucker, Mark Jankowski, like Anthony Beauvillier, you can go through the list. Gustav Nyquist, he's had a great year, but again.
No, Nyquist is good when he's healthy.
But, right, but is he like, oh yeah, that guy's makes sense as, you know, one of the three best forwards on one of the best offensive teams in the NHL. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but it doesn't necessarily scream that going into the season.
The Canucks are entering with Pew Suter on their first line and Ilya Mikheyev
what
on their
I'm
second
saying
line. And on
is
and on.
Both teams have been able to, I think, punch above their weight, right? Like the Preds offensively do better than just looking at their personnel would suggest,
right?
Because of coaching.
And
the Canucks have been able to do it defensively.
That's right?
You don't look at this personnel group and think, oh yeah, elite defensive team right there. They have all the pieces, but they've been able to get there because of the system, because of the way they've bought in. And it's the same thing with the Preds, but just in reverse. And I find that just a fascinating kind of lens to look at the series through. And what's really interesting is, and now it's especially pronounced in the Preds case, mm-hmm. but both teams have gotten even better at their strength as the season progressed, right?
Right.
And I wonder if maybe we see that, you know, the Canucks had less improvement to do over the course of the season because they got the intro with Tocchet last year, whereas the Preds were starting fresh with Brunette this year. But the Canucks have been good defensively all year. After the All-Star break, they've been elite. They've been second in the league in terms of limiting shot attempts. And the Preds, they were, you know, pretty good, or they are like about average pre-All-Star break in terms of offensive generation. They've been third in the league after the All-Star break. So really what you see is the coaching staffs for these teams like building that identity throughout the course of the season. And I think it's going to be a fascinating clash of styles going into this matchup.
Well, I'd add this. It's in some ways a matchup too, pitting a pair of teams that effectively are trying to do like an aggressive retool, right? Like a win now retool. Both of them launched it at roughly the same time too, right? Like both of these teams were big time sellers at the deadline. Both exercised significant punitive buyouts on key players, whether it was Duchesne or Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Nashville also ate salary to get off Ryan Johansson, right? So there was a lot of change with both rosters. And sort of an emphasis on greater depth, glue guys, right?
Culture.
Bringing in culture setters,
huge,
right?
Huge emphasis on that, yeah.
You know, my preseason, I don't know if the Preds will be good, but the vibes will be take as one of my better feels of the offseason, sure. To be totally honest with you. So, one of my better morning touches. So,
Jesus.
Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, more than anything, the Canucks should be favored. I'll probably be picking them, too. Not going to tell you the amount of games. In seven. But I do feel like the gambling markets and fans in general are sleeping on a team that I think bears very little resemblance to the one that the Canucks easily handled back in October and November, given the sort of tactical changes that they've been able to implement to stunning success in the second half.
Yeah. So, and just again, pre-All-Star break, well, so not looking at offense, defense, but just overall shot attempt share. So pre-All-Star break, Canucks were 19th, Nashville was 18th. Post-All-Star break, Canucks 5th, Nashville 6th. So two teams that were kind of middle to slightly below average before the All-Star break have, as you said, been among the very best in controlling shot attempts since the All-Star break. And I think, again, they do it in a very different way. Offense for the Preds, defensively, mostly for the Canucks. But
we've got a lot of questions, too, coming in about how the Predators have been finishing, right? Like the idea of is this lucky? And the percentages have been in their favor, 101.6, but it's mostly goaltending. Preds 5-on-5 shooting clip since the All-Star break, 8.91. Vancouver's 8.94. So, you know, the real difference there is in volume, like the volume of what they generate and the rate at which they generate it. You know, which is why they've scored a lot more goals over the same time frame, despite an identical shooting percentage.
All right, we've got lots more time in the next segment coming up to kind of dive into the matchups and some of the things specifically that we're excited to see in this series. Another headline, though, the Canucks have extended Vasily Podkolzin's two-year deal, $1 million AAV. I know you had some quick thoughts up at The Athletic, but makes sense to get this done going into the playoffs, and this is a guy that they're probably going to count on to play a significant role of some sort, considering all of the uncertainty with their UFA forwards going into next year.
Yeah, that's the key. Lafferty, Dakota Joshua, Bluger, all expiring, all key guys. This team's been very open about the fact that they're going to need internal depth options to replace at least some of those players without question. And, you know, I think it's notable, too, that we haven't seen, I guess I'd forgot Elias Lindholm, too. But I guess it's, is the one thing that sort of makes me wonder is, do you think it's notable that the Canucks, because we've seen this before, Canucks will occasionally throw an elbow if negotiations stall or something, right? I mean, in Bo Horvat's case, they signed JT Miller, Pettersson, you might get traded to Carolina. I don't think anyone believed it, but you know, it helped stimulate things. So we've seen this sort of occasionally. Brock Besser, remember that day? That was a hilarious sequence. So I just wonder, like, is this, does the fact that we haven't seen a Joshua extension or a Lafferty extension in any way apply to the timing of this? Because you knew pretty much that Pod Colson was going to get either a 1 year deal at $875K or a 2 year deal at somewhere between $1 and $1.2 million. He could score 6 goals in 14 games in the playoffs and he was still going to end up at 1.2 given his lack of production in the NHL, given how much time he spent in the American League. I guess unless he got an offer sheet, which, you know, very rare. So, you know, I'm sure part of the logic is like, let's get it wrapped up before the playoffs with a player whose confidence has occasionally flagged and who we're going to need because his size profile is required in our bottom six. But the savings are minute. So the timing, it was interesting to me. I didn't really spell that out at The Athletic because it's more something I'm wondering aloud. I just, what do you think when presented with that?
I think it's as simple as,
let's get it done.
Yeah, it's straightforward. As you said, it's not like it's going to, there's not going to be a huge variance in it. So get it done. And maybe it's a little vote of confidence for the player going into the playoffs, but they're going to have a lot of work to do before the summer, right? Whether it's re-signing their own UFAs, you know, projecting who they want to target in the market. So if you have a relatively straightforward piece of business that's not complicated, that's easy, both sides are in alignment, why not get it done if you can? I think it's probably as simple as that.
We'll see.
And at any rate, you know, gives him an opportunity to be a full-time NHLer and potentially, I don't want to say breakout necessarily, but maybe breakout going into next year with a full-time role.
Yeah, well, let's get into it more in an open segment, but obviously the likelihood of him becoming a top six guy has diminished really significantly over the last 12 months, but that's not fate, that's probability, and we'll see what he can do.
All right, lineup notes. The Canucks do play a game, as mentioned, in Peg City tonight. Brock Besser, Brock Besser not taking that trip to Peg City. He's not traveling with the team tonight. John Liu out of Winnipeg reporting that JT Miller, Philip Hronek, Ian Cole also out. So you add that to Besser, that's four regulars out of the lineup. That suggests, well, that means that Phil DiGiuseppe, Nils Amon, Noah Juulsen, Mark Friedman will all get in. Meanwhile, for the Jets, Connor Hellebuck, Josh Morrissey, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Adam Lowry, Brendan Dillon, all out. So a bunch of key contributors, obviously their best player in Connor Hellebuck, all sitting this one out. This is a true no stakes game 82. Both teams will just be hoping to finish the game, be healthy, and look forward to their first round playoff matchups. We'll skip over the playoff forecast today. Obviously, playoff matchups locked in for the Vancouver Canucks. They're playing Nashville. I don't believe the Athletic playoff series preview is up yet,
no,
so maybe we can dive into that tomorrow a little bit.
62%. So,
all right.
Yep. And then, I mean, there's a whole wash of new gambling odds. We could probably do a whole segment on it, but Canucks opened at at minus 150. That's 60% implied probability to win the series against Nashville, who are plus 130 dogs. Gambling markets have it, you know, have the Canucks far more likely to win. Like the shortest odds in the series, the shortest odds that you can get if you're trying to pick the series winner and the correct length is Canucks in 7. The second shortest odds, though, is Canucks in 5. So Canucks on home ice either way. Gambling markets do it like I do it, Jamie. Conn Smythe odds. So just like to tout really quick before I get back into the Canucks. Seth Jarvis and Wyatt Johnson are both plus 10,000 elsewhere.
Woo.
Which if I bet on hockey would already be placed. You know, not necessarily. I just think those are like really good players on really good teams, so of interest to me for sure. Canucks don't have players sort of like in the immediate inner circle. In fact, Elias Pettersson has the shortest odds among Canucks players as it opens at plus 3,500. Quinn Hughes plus 4,000. Thatcher Demko plus 4,000. JT Miller plus 5,000. Conn Smythe odds for the Vancouver Canucks core. Let's go.
I gotta say, I like Demko there.
Plus 4,000?
If you're going to take a Canucks player, just because, like, don't you think Demko getting hot I'm not saying it's the only way they can go deep in the playoffs here, but
you're right,
if you're mapping out like Stanley Cup victory for the Canucks, you have to think Demko's going to have an incredible playoffs.
I mean, it's a good way of taking a 10-1 bet, Canucks to win Stanley Cup, and making it a 40-1 bet.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I don't actually hate that logic as a tout, but again, you get up to 10,000, you get up to 12,000, like you get up to like Bo Horvat, and you can get Bo Horvat or Seth Jarvis at roughly the same odds. Who would you rather have?
Well, Seth Jarvis. Yeah.
Because
Bo Horvat might play 4 games in the playoffs.
Might. I mean, good for them. Like, they played well down the stretch. I'm not trying to besmirch Bo Horvat, but that's as lopsided a first-round series as we've seen in a while, except for the fact that it's not as lopsided as Rangers-Capitals. My God.
Woof.
Yeah, that used to be a classic.
Yeah.
Like, Ovechkin versus Lundqvist, and now it's like, the Capitals minus 37 goal differential.
The worst is all the people pretending, like, the Capitals, everyone countered them out, and, like, should Spencer Carberry be in the Jack Adams? It's like, no, this team's bad. It's like, a team everyone thought would be mid to below average is mid to below average. What are we talking about?
It's got to be an ironclad rule of hockey that you cannot possibly be in Jack Adams consideration if your team accumulated fewer points than the Blues.
Seriously. Like, what? No, Spencer Carberry does not need to be in Jack Adams consideration. Okay, we'll wrap it up there. That's the whiteboard for today. But as I mentioned, open segment next. We can dive into the matchup between the Canucks and the Nashville Predators in round one. Hit us up with your questions, your thoughts, what you're looking forward to in the series, what you're worried about from a Canucks perspective. We'll dive into it next. Also, Brendan Batchelor joins us at 1 o'clock. More Canucks talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650.